Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for June 14th, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be speaking with Richard Treisman, Neil McDonald, and Stéphane Mouilleron about new work from their group published in the current issue of Science Signaling. The team has done a structural analysis of an actin-binding transcription factor to determine how its activity is regulated by actin-binding. Actin is a very highly conserved protein that's present in both monomeric and filamentous forms in cells. Actin monomers, or G-actin, are polymerized to form filamentous actin, or F-actin, which is part of the cytoskeleton, the internal scaffolding that shapes and supports the cell. The dynamics of actin polymerization and depolymerization are important for modulating cell shape and motility. Treisman, McDonald, and Mouilleron spoke to me on the phone from the Cancer Research UK London Research Institute. First, I'd like to say welcome to everyone. Welcome, Dr. Treisman, Dr. McDonald, Dr. Mouilleron.
A pleasure.
The work in this paper focuses on a transcription factor that's regulated by actin polymerization. Why regulate a transcription factor with actin?
Well, this particular transcription factor is involved in controlling a whole set of genes to do with the actin cytoskeleton. So the control is a means of relating cytoskeletal gene expression to the amount of unused actin in the cell. Signals induce changes in the actin cytoskeleton by assembling structures from F-actin, and they also induce assembly of F-actin from G-actin. So what this factor does is sense how much G-actin is available and adjust the expression of cytoskeletal genes accordingly.
This transcription factor is called MRTFA. How does actin polymerization regulate the activity of this transcription factor?
Well, it regulates it in a number of different ways. The one we know most about is regulating its subcellular localization. Actin binding is required for export of this factor from the cell nucleus, and at high levels, actin binding can inhibit its import. So if you reduce the amount of unpolymerized actin in the cell, you induce nuclear accumulation of the factor, and if you increase it, you inhibit nuclear accumulation. There's a second area of regulation, which is the control of its activity as a transcriptional cofactor, which happens in the nucleus, and we really don't know how that works. That's work for the future, but that's also controlled by actin interaction with this regulatory domain.
Does monomeric actin exist only in the cytoplasm, and so it comes into the nucleus when it's bound to the transcription factor, or does monomeric actin actually exist in the nucleus?
There is actin in the nucleus. The work that's been done to ask whether it's monomeric or assembled into filaments suggests that the majority of it is monomeric. What it's doing there has been a matter of intense speculation and contention in the field. There is a system that's required to pump unpolymerized actin out of the nucleus through something called exportin 6. How it gets into the nucleus isn't clear. It's possible it could come in with this factor, although I actually don't think that that's the case. So it's a mystery how it gets in. We know how it gets out. One of the things it's doing there when it's in the nucleus is regulating this factor.
You solved the crystal structure of this transcription factor of MRTFA, or at least part of this transcription factor, a domain of it, bound to actin to learn more about the mechanism of how actin binding regulates its activity. What did that structural analysis tell you?
Well, the first thing to say is that the structure we determined was actin bound to a sequence which is sufficient to confer this kind of shuttling regulation onto a heterologous protein. So that's something called the RPEL domain, which is the principal actin binding region in the protein. The term RPEL motif is a 20 amino acid sequence motif, which is an actin binding structure. The RPEL domain has got three of those motifs with two intervening spaces of about the same length. So the domain is the entire sequence with three motifs, and all three are, and the spaces are required for regulation. And my structural colleagues can tell you what novel insights we got into interactions of actin with proteins through the structure.
Stéphane, you did the structural work. How did you solve the structure of the RPEL domain of MRTFA bound to actin?
Yes, it's just quite long project. So we got the first crystals 4 years ago, and the first data set was collected in 2006. And the problem initially was to find the right construct to get crystals. So we had to chop off some part of the RPL domain, which we were not folded at the N-terminus or C-terminus before having crystals. And these crystals were diffracting, but at low resolution. So we've tried all the optimization we could to get decent resolution, but nothing worked. Except one thing is we dehydrated the crystals before shooting them. And the dehydration just improved hugely the diffraction limit from 8 angstrom to 3.1 angstrom for the trimer actin complex. And for the 5 actin complex, the crystals were not diffracting at high resolution neither. So we just had to grow some massive, huge crystals. And to do so, we had to use a lot of material because we use a protein solution concentrated at more than 100 mg per mil in order to get these huge crystals diffracting at 3.5 angstrom. And then once we had a good data set, the structure was, I mean, it was molecular placement used to serve the structure because, I mean, 90% of the structure is actin, which is well known in structural biology.
Dr. McDonald here. So the structural analysis carried out by Stefan in my lab showed us the number of actins that are bound by the RPL domain, and the special arrangement of those actins in wrapping around the RPL domain into almost a pseudofilament, in fact. It also showed how the bipartite nuclear localization sequence in MRTFA becomes buried when it's coated with these five different actins. So, in a nutshell, that's what the analysis showed us. All of which were unexpected and a surprise to us all, I think.
And this is Richard here to comment on that, but we had initially shown that the RPL motif is capable of binding actin by itself. The analysis demonstrated that the spaces between the motifs are also actin binding sites. And if you analyze by mutagenesis the requirement for those actins to bind to get regulation, you actually need all of the binding sites to be intact for regulation to occur.
Actin interacts with a lot of different types of proteins. Is the RPL domain kind of a typical example of the sort of domain through which actin interacts with proteins? And how does this structure compare to other motifs to which actin binds?
The one thing that I find intriguing about this interaction is that a lot of actin-binding proteins are binding F-actin and regulating what it does. There are a lot of G-actin-binding proteins, but they are distinguished by the fact that they do things to regulate the behavior of actin. The RPL domain is a case where it's the protein that got the RPL domain that's being regulated by actin. So in one case, actin's the regulator. In the other cases, it's regulated. So that's what's intriguing and novel about this particular domain. In terms of how it interacts with actin, there are similarities, which Neil and Stefan can expand on.
Neil MacDonald.
If you look at an individual RPL motif, the RPL motif engages an additional part of the actin surface that isn't normally engaged by other actin-binding proteins, with one exception. That's just considering an isolated RPL motif. But there are very few examples of multiple actins binding to a single protein, and the interactions we see there really are unprecedented, really, I think it's fair to say.
Richard Treisman.
A lot of actin-binding proteins bind actin in what's called the hydrophobic cleft at the bottom of the actin molecule. And that's shared with lots of different G-actin-binding proteins. So in that sense, this motif is similar to other actin-binding motifs and sequences. It also binds to actin through another segment, which we called the hydrophobic ledge in a previous paper, which is not used by very many actin-binding proteins. So it's got similarities and differences.
Were those monomers in this structure arranged in like a filament-type conformation, the way that the actin monomers are hooked together in an actin filament?
So, McDonald's here. The arrangement of the G-actins bound to the RFL domain, was quite different, completely different from the F-actin arrangement. And that's because the actins actually wrap around the MRTFA RFL domain, which itself appears to be unfolded in the absence of the actin binding and adopts a helical conformation when actins are loaded onto it. So it's a very striking arrangement where the actins actually appear to form, as I said earlier, a pseudofilament with the RPL domain forming a sort of a left-handed helical turn itself. So you actually end up with a quasi-double helical arrangement of the actin and the RPL domain. Sorry, I have to laugh. Because we have debated and discussed and argued about this for some time. We've had a lot of semantic arguments about how to describe the structure.
So in an actin filament, F-actin, the actins are bound to one another so that they wrap around one another and form a helix.
That's true, which is an open structure. That's to say it continues. It's a polymer, whereas for the RPL domain, it's of a finite length because there are only three RPL motifs and two spacer regions. So you only load on five, but there's a special arrangement of those five actin monomers.
If I can add something that Stefan is speaking, in this complex of five actin, although the complex is really packed on this actin wrap around MRTFA, there is very, very few contact between each actin molecule. This arrangement is due to MRTFA and almost not to actin-actin contact.
The actin monomers are binding pretty much exclusively to the transcription factor and not to one another.
Yeah, we can see very few direct contact between the actin molecules.
Dr. Treisman, Dr. McDonald, Dr. Mouilleron, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Richard Treisman, Neil McDonald, and Stéphane Mouilleron talking about their paper published in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Mouilleron and colleagues, and it's titled Structure of a Pentavalent G-Actin MRTFA Complex Reveals Mechanisms by Which G-Actin Controls Nucleocytoplasmic Shuttling of a Transcriptional Coactivator. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.